It is S3 E11 of Fanacek. Very, very excited to be back here with you all. This is Vic Tayback, part one. That's right, Vic Tayback is getting multiple episodes because the son of a bitch had so many credits, I couldn't squeeze it into one episode. Or quite frankly, halfway through writing it, I was like, damn, this is a lot. I'm just going to stop now and call it part one. That's how lazy your boy Fanacek is. But I'm doing a little something different tonight. It's Saturday night as I record this. You hear that? I had a little cocktail, made myself an old fashioned. I got the house to myself. When you're home alone, what better than have a drink and talk about Vic Tayback, right? Alcohol, Vic Tayback. I have no life is the point, but I'm excited to do this. So I love Vic Tayback. He's one of those guys. He's kind of like Telly Savalas. Actually, he reminds me a lot of Telly Savalas, which I'll touch on later. But he just makes me happy. Every time I see Vic Tayback, I'm excited. But I knew very little about him. All I really knew was Alice, which of course comes from the movie. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, and it became a very popular TV show. And I always recognize him from an early episode of Columbo, which I'll talk about. But other than that, I'm like, I don't know a whole hell of a lot about Vic Tayback. So when I was doing this research, there were so many things that came across. I was like, oh God, I forgot Vic Tayback was in that. So if you're like me and you love shit like Vic Tayback, you're going to like this episode. If you're not like me and you don't like Vic Tayback, then I suggest tuning in somewhere else. Or just fucking stick through it and learn about Vic Tayback. And away we go. So Victor E. Tayback was born on January 6, 1930 in Brooklyn, New York. New York! His family moved to Burbank when he was a teenager. He graduated from Burbank High School in 1949. Funny enough, Debbie Reynolds graduated from the same high school 1 year later, 1950. Have a little sip of my old fashioned here. I don't often have a cocktail while I'm recording podcasts, but it's an experiment. After high school, he served in the U.S. Navy and then began his acting career at the age of 25. He was a lifelong member of the Actors Studio. Mr. Tayback is an Emmy nominee and a two-time Golden Globe winner. So let's do what I do. Let's dive into his credits. He has 151 acting credits. Let's start with the first and the last. The first is a 1958 episode of Buckskin. Buckskin. Sounds sexy. Sounds like a condom, doesn't it? Honey, do you have a condom? Oh, I don't have a condom. I have a buckskin condom. Wow. Anyway, I should probably delete that out. Edit that out. I'll fix that in editing. The final credit is a 1990 episode of MacGyver. How fucking cool is that? What a way to end your career with MacGyver. So let's start with Buckskin. 1958 to 1959, it lasted 39 episodes. I'm going to pull out my trusty IMDb and I'm going to read you a synopsis of Buckskin. Annie O'Connell's boarding house in Buckskin, Montana in 1880 is the setting for dramas unfolding for travelers and townies alike. Stories are seen through the eyes of 10-year-old Jody. So that's that. So Buckskin's funny. There's actually a town here near me, probably in between Nashville and all the way to Memphis, called Bucksnort. I always loved that, Bucksnort. Actually, up until recently, I had a really cool truck stop that I used to always like to stop at when I went to Memphis. I have to go to Memphis quite a bit for work. I forget what it was called. North 40, is it? It was called North 40, but then they shut it down. I don't know if they're revamping it or if it's just going away, but that was like my go-to all the way to Memphis. Stop at North 40, get some homemade food, that homemade breakfast there, some coffee. But alas, it is no longer there. So Darren McGavin directed an episode of this show. It was the first of his like six directing credits that he has. If you don't know, Darren McGavin, he comes up a lot. He was the dad in Christmas Story, which is what most people know him from. One guest star jumped out at me, James Hung. So remember that name because James Hung will come back as I turn my notes here. And now the final credit, a 1990 episode of MacGyver. This show, if you don't know this show, you've been living under a rock. 1985 to 1992, 139 episodes. Let's pull up the synopsis. I mean, basically it's a guy fixes shit with whatever he, like, real resourceful. Here we go. The adventures of a secret agent armed with almost infinite scientific resourcefulness. Ooh, I like it. Starred Richard Dean Anderson. Whenever I think of Richard Dean Anderson, I always think of Homer Simpson's sister-in-laws because they basically real horny for Richard Dean Anderson. I always thought that was, what a great actor to pick out. Like, of all the actors out there in TV, for those two gross, chain-smoking, hairy-legged sisters to be into, Richard Dean Anderson seems to make sense. I always love the theme song as well, and I'm going to go ahead and play it for you. This is the theme to MacGyver. About to get crazy. Here we go. I fix things and I use matches and rubber bands, paper clips. I can build an hydrogen bomb. All right. And you are welcome for that, fans of mine. I love that show. Love that theme song. Let's go ahead and read a review of of MacGyver. Let's take a look here. Another great show from the 80s. When I think of the 80s, shows like The Dukes of Hazzard, Dallas, The A-Team, and MacGyver bring back memories. They were fun, and with the exception of Dallas, the three others all had one thing in common. They all saw things with very little violence. Even though it may seem that there was some, the A-Team always made contraptions that would get them out of trouble, but no one died. The Dukes always fought their way out of trouble just long enough for Roscoe to come arrest the bad guys, and with MacGyver, well, he would just make a radio receiver out of a paperclip, grass, and a shoelace, or he would make a dart gun out of bubblegum and a toothpick. I honestly believe that this was the toughest man in the world. That's a great review. MacGyver had a lot of great guest stars. I jotted some of them down as I went through it. Terry Hatcher, Bruce McGill. Bruce McGill was he was D-Day in Animal House. He was if you look him up, you know him. He was in My Cousin Vinny. Michael DeBar was in this. He was always like a bad guy in 80s things. Look him up too. Cuba Gooding Jr., James Hong. James Hong is back. So here's what's cool about that. James Hong was in Vic Tayback's first credit and his final credit, or at least they worked on the same projects. So that was a first for me in my Fanacek research. So I thought I'd point that out. James Hong and Vic Tayback. I love it. Mayim Bialik was in an early MacGyver episode. She became Blossom. And then Amy Farrah Fowler on The Big Bang Theory. Dick Butkus appeared. Rest in peace. I'm gonna take a sip. I'm a Bears fan, so this is for you, Dick Butkus. Do love a good old-fashioned. Herb Edelman did MacGyver. He comes up a lot in the podcast as well. He was Stan's Bornak on The Golden Girls. Linda Blair, she was, you know, the little girl Reagan in The Exorcist. And she was actually in Vic Tayback's episode. How about that? So he actually co-starred with Linda Blair in his episode. Joe Santos did it. He was from The Rockford Files. And many, many more. I could do this all day long. But I just love that Vic Tayback ended on such a high note. Now, let's scroll through his career and find some highlights, and then we'll end this episode with some interesting credits. What do you say? So his second credit is an episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. I feel like that's been coming up a lot, man, with the Dick York, Dick Sargent. We've been doing a lot of Alfred Hitchcock. Now, his episode was Man with a Problem, where I lost my place here in my notes. So it aired November 16th, 1958. Here's the synopsis. Karen Adams' infidelity drives her husband, Carl, to attempt suicide by jumping from a high window ledge at a hotel. Can police officer Barrett stop him? Damn. Man with a Problem. They're going to remake it pretty soon with Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith. Nailed the joke. Because if there's ever a husband out there who wants to kill himself right now, it's got to be that fucking guy. Let's take a look at the cast in this. So, Peter Mark Richmond is in it. He was always the adopted dad in, that's how I know him. Jeez, Punky Brewster. Elizabeth Montgomery. That's the cheating wife. How about that? So she's so beautiful, so talented. She died young. She was, of course, Darren's wife, the witch in Bewitched. Love her. Okay, now onward and upward with some highlights. Let's take a look here. He wraps up 1958 with a religious film. I'm not going to dive too deep into it. It's called The Power of the Resurrection. He played Simon the Canaanite. And I love these. So I've come across like a lot of shows like this and all my Fanacek podcast episodes where it's like they used to make these like religious shows, but they were casting all these 70s actors. I don't know anything about Simon the Canaanite. I have to imagine that he didn't look or talk anything like fucking Vic Tayback, right? Is there anyone in the Bible that could look like Mel Sharples from fucking Alice? That just makes me laugh, and I love it. So it's like Vic Tayback, you know, hey, I'm Simon the Canaanite. The Robert Blake is Peter. David Soul is, I don't know, Joseph. I'm making this up, by the way. Telly Savalas is Jesus. Who loves you, baby? I'm the Christ. Call me Yahweh. My name is I Am. Vic Tayback and Telly Savalas really seem like a solid pair. How is there no film, like a movie, a cop movie or a buddy movie, whatever it is, starring Vic Tayback and Telly Savalas together? That is a damn shame, and I hope they're making one in heaven. Okay, moving on. 1959 and 1960 have some pretty cool looking credits. Stuff I've never heard of. Check out the film T-Bird Gang. So T-Bird Gang was an early Telly Savalas credit. A high school boy out to find his father's killer joins up with a gang of juvenile delinquents. This has such a 50s feel to it, even though it's not really a, like it, I think came out in 59 or 60, but it just seems like such like an early 50s kind of film. Vic Tayback played the very critical role of cop number three. You gotta start somewhere, folks. One of the producers of this movie that caught my eye was Roger Corman. And I thought that was really interesting. Roger Corman has his fingerprints all over Hollywood. I made a note to read the first trivia here. Okay. Jack Nicholson and John Herman Shainer appeared in publicity stills for the film. They did not appear in the film, but posed in the pictures as a favor to producer Roger Corman. Well, there you go. Another 1959 movie of Vic Tayback's is Gangster Story. This only jumped out at me because it starred, if I'm not mistaken, Walter Matthau. Here's the synopsis for Gangster Story. Hoodlum Jack Martin is on the lam and robs a small town bank, which brings the local cops and local crime boss into the mix. Mm-mm-mm. Taking an old-fashioned break. Again, starred Walter Matthau. Love Walter Matthau. Now we're in the 60s. So in 1960, Vic Tayback does the John Wayne film North to Alaska alongside Fabian and Ernie Kovacs. Fabian, wow. And whenever I think of Fabian now, because he was obviously a singer. He's like a C-list level Elvis, really. But I always laugh at in the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood when Rick Dalton is talking about how he only got his part in the 14th Fist of McCluskey because Fabian was supposed to do it but hurt himself up until about 2 weeks before Fabian had the part. So that always makes me laugh. So Vic Tayback, he also has an episode of 77 Sunset Strip and then an episode of something very interesting, Hotel de Paris. I did not know this and I'm always taken with stuff I don't know. Hotel de Paris ran from 1959 to 1960. It only lasted 32 episodes. Here's a synopsis for you. Sundance, a reformed gunslinger, oh my lord. So a gunslinger named Sundance, but not the Sundance Kid, mind you. Anyway, Sundance, a reformed gunslinger just released from prison, drifts into the town of Georgetown, Colorado. A tangle with the town villain ends up with Sundance being forced to shoot him, resulting in his being made town marshal. He takes a shine to two French sisters who own the town's most elegant hotel, the Hotel de Paris. Especially the young, pretty one. Well, yeah, if we're going to hang out with sisters, go for the young, pretty one. I made a note to read a review here. Let's take a gander. I like to get a feel for what this would have been like. So this person's titled it, had its own comic book. Well, there you go. Hotel de Paris, a.k.a. Sundance, ran for a full television season back in 1959-60, 33 episode. I had it as 32 episodes. Anyway. Needing something to distinguish it from the many 30 and 60 minute Western series which flooded the airwaves at that time, the producers hit on the idea of having the main character, Sundance, wear a black hat with a hat band made out of shiny silver dollars. He was called Sundance, not the Sundance Kid, and he did not wear mirrors on his hat. Apparently, the mirror myth grew up because with their little black and white televisions and the show's cheap production values, many viewers never got a close-up at his hat's band, and they thought it was mirrors, and that's the end of that. So there you go. So just to clarify, it was not supposed to be the Sundance Kid. I also made a note to read some trivia. Let's take a look. The premise of this show is based on real-life proprietor Louis Dupuy and his Second Chances story, Second Chances story at Hotel de Paris in Georgetown, Colorado. Since 1954, the hotel has been owned and operated as a museum by the National Society of the Colonial Dames of America in Colorado and is a site of the National Trust for Historic Preservation. I don't know why I made a note to read that. Well, here's another trivia that I should probably read. Sundance's dog was named Useless. That's worth reading. So maybe that's the trivia I should have read. Sundance's dog was named Useless. I should probably name my dog Useless. He's a sweet little guy, but fucking A. Very useless. All right. 1961 only has one Vic Tayback credit. So my man was doing some R&R in 61, or maybe he just wasn't in demand yet. I don't know. But that credit is a doozy. 5 Minutes to Live. It starred Johnny Cash. So now he's working with Johnny Cash. I'll read you a synopsis. It is a movie, hour and 20 minutes long, so not a very long movie. A murderous thug and his cohorts take a bank executive's wife hostage after their robbery plans go awry. Bum, bum, bum. It's got a cool poster. I made a note to read it. Oh, it's actually a really cool poster. It's got Johnny Cash holding a gun, like a really young Johnny Cash holding a gun. A woman's price drops fast as the time limit ticks away. How could she extend the moments he had given her? 5 Minutes to Live, starring Johnny Cash, Don Woods, Kay Forrester, Pamela Mason. Bum, bum, bum. It's actually a really cool-looking poster. I like a cool-looking poster. Ron Howard was also in this, by the way. A little young Ronnie Howard as he went by that time. So 1962 isn't too much to write home about. So now we're in 62, by the by. It's not, like I said, it's nothing really too much to write home about. He does an episode of Saints and Sinners and a movie based on a Jules Verne novel, 5 Weeks in a Balloon. I'm going to read it only because the cast is great. The cast in 5 minutes or 5 weeks in a balloon was amazing. So again, it's based on like a Jules Verne story. I don't know if it's a novel or a short story. In 1862, the British Commission inventor Ferguson. Wait. Okay. I think the old fashioned is getting me. So let me have another sip here. If you're at home listening, make yourself an old fashioned. Drink with me. In 1862, the British Commission inventor Ferguson to claim uncharted land in West Africa for Britain by flying his giant hot air balloon there. I read that twice, so I don't know what the hell's going on, but okay. But here's the thing. Check out this cast. So Red Buttons, Fabian. Fabian is back. I've never done a podcast where I mentioned Fabian twice, so epic night. Barbara Eden was in this. Peter Lorre was in this. Get the fuck out of here. Oh my gosh. Who else? Peter Lorre alone. God, I love Peter Lorre. I was just watching. What did I watch of Peter Lorre? Oh, The Maltese Falcon. Shit. Forgot he was in that. Watched that and forgot how good he was. But Red Buttons and Fabian and Barbara Eden, Peter Lorre. Yes, please. I'll watch that anytime. Okay, moving on. Now we are in 1963 and Vic Tayback is a year or two away, right, from going on an epic run. But first, he has to do a Steve McQueen movie. What? That's right, Steve McQueen, and he will come up several times later in this podcast, Mr. McQueen will. So shit is just getting cool. 1963's Love with a Proper Stranger. That's right, Steve McQueen is in the mix now. He's going to come up again. So here is Love with a Proper Stranger. A sales clerk at Macy's department store finds herself pregnant after a one-night stand with Vanacek. Wait, oh, that can't be right. A sales clerk at Macy's department store finds herself pregnant after a one-night stand with a musician who does not even remember her. Well, that sounds like McQueen. Let's just read the cast. The lead, Natalie Wood. I love Natalie Wood. I've talked about this a lot. She's come up a lot on the podcast. She died young. I think she was 40. She drowned, probably killed by her husband. We don't know. Christopher Walken was in the mix too. Really weird thing. But as I mentioned before, I've got two daughters. My younger one, holy shit, dead ringer for Natalie Wood. I mean, it's almost creepy sometimes. What else? Who else is in this movie? Natalie Wood, Steve McQueen, Edie Adams, Harvey Lembeck. I liked him. He's a little Jewish comedian. I always liked Harvey Lembeck. Who else? Tom Bosley. How about that? Tom Bosley was the dad. He was speaking of Ron Howard. He played Ron Howard's dad in Happy Days. So there you go. So that is Love with a Proper Stranger. Now this movie has some serious pedigree. It was written by Arnold Schulman. He was like a prolific, like early TV writer that transitioned to writing movies like Cimarron, The Night They Raided Minsky's, which, by the way, I'm going to reference Once Upon a Time in Hollywood a lot today because A, it comes up, and B, I love doing that. But there's a marquee with this movie that can be seen as Cliff Booth is driving down Hollywood Boulevard. And again, The Night They Raided Minsky's. Arnold Schumann also wrote Funny Lady. He wrote A Chorus Line. But the movie itself was directed by Robert Mulligan. He directed tons of early TV and then movies like To Kill a Mockingbird, Summer of 42, Same Time Next Year, Clara's Heart with Whoopi Goldberg. He also directed The Man in the Moon. Now, The Man in the Moon was a very, not to be confused with Man on the Moon, about Andy Kaufman starring Jim Carrey. This was The Man in the Moon, which came out way earlier, I think like 92, something like that. It was a very, very early Reese Witherspoon movie. And here's why it jumped out at me. So I used to work at the video store, as I've talked about a lot. This movie was one of those, I think the distributor sent it to us. So it wasn't like for rent. It was like they sent us a copy. I think the idea being if we liked it, we'd buy copies of it and rent it out. I don't know if the owners ever did that, but in the store, we watched the movie a lot. So twice in my life, two examples jump out of me where I've seen grown men become really inappropriately interested in a young female character. And this is one of them. The other is The Professional with Natalie Portman. I remember like grown men like being in love with Natalie Portman in The Professional. And Natalie Portman, I think, was 13 in The fucking Professional, which is really weird. Well, this movie had the same vibe. You know, I think Reese Witherspoon was probably 13 in the movie, you know, really young. And I just remember like men in the video store being like, who is that girl? Because she was a nobody at the time and just took a really inappropriate interest in her. Interestingly, though, both of those women grew up to be Oscar winners. So there you go. So they got their revenge on those creepy older men who were gawking at them. We must move on, though. We must move on. Remember that run that I said Vic Tayback was about to start? Well, here it is. 1964. The Beatles have landed in America. It's nothing to do with Vic Tayback, but still, 1964. He does episodes of Arrest and Trial and The Lieutenant. 1965, Rawhide, F Troop, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Boom! 1966 starts with an episode of I Dream of Jeannie. It does not get much more iconic than that. Speaking of I Dream of Jeannie, my father-in-law has a couple of classic Las Vegas slot machines in his house, like old school ones. And one of them is an I Dream of Jeannie one. And you know, the second he dies, and I don't want to die, mind you, but the second he dies, I'm pulling my buddies up. We're going to haul that fucker out of his house and right into mine. But anyway, but seriously, Tayback does an episode of I Dream of Jeannie in 66. He also does an episode of Daniel Boone and a short-lived show I never heard of with Rich Little called Love on a Rooftop. 1966 also gives us two cool movies. First, he did Dead Heat on a Merry-Go-Round. Interesting title, Dead Heat on a Merry-Go-Round. Let me pull that up on the phone here. So again, 1966, a paroled con man coordinates the robbery of an LA airport bank with the arrival of the Soviet premier. Well, interesting. The cast is even more interesting. James Coburn's in the lead. Aldo Ray. I mentioned Aldo Ray a couple of episodes ago. He's one of Tarantino's favorite actors. And in the novelization of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, there's a whole chapter named after Aldo Ray, in which Cliff Booth is hanging out with him, like on a filming location in a hotel somewhere. But he's a character in the book, but never made it to the movie. Who else is in this? Any other cast members that I recognize? No one worth mentioning, but I love that it's James Coburn and Aldo Ray. I did make a note to read some trivia about this movie, Dead Heat on a Merry-Go-Round. In his film debut, Harrison Ford has a small, uncredited role as a bellhop. So there you go. How about that? So Dead Heat on a Merry-Go-Round has an uncredited young Harrison Ford. Now, the second cool movie that Tayback did in 66 is Gambit. Really cool movie poster. Typical like late 60s fucking movie poster. I love it. Here, I'll read you the synopsis. An English cat burglar needs a Eurasian dancer's help to pull off the perfect heist. But even the most foolproof schemes have a way of backfiring. Dun, dun, dun. So let's look at the cast. We got several Oscar winners here. Shirley MacLaine, Michael Caine. Who else is in this thing? Well, that's about it. Several Oscars and Golden Globe nominations for this movie. And I made a note to read the first three trivias. So it must have been taken aback by them. Let's take a look. Shirley MacLaine does not speak until 29 minutes into this movie. In fact, she doesn't even appear to sing along with the other women during the opening song and dance number. Taking an old-fashioned break there. Second trivia. The first draft of the screenplay was written by Brian Forbes in 1960 when the story was designed as a vehicle for Cary Grant. He eventually dropped out of the project, which subsequently underwent many changes. It was eventually decided to make the girl the central character, and Shirley MacLaine was signed for the lead. After seeing the something-something file, she suggested Michael Caine as her leading man, which led to still more rewriting to accommodate his working-class Cockney accent. He did have that Cockney, doesn't he? He just retired, by the way. Michael Caine just announced his retirement. So, that's sad, but what a hell of a career. And here's the last thing. A gambit is a chess tactic where a player sacrifices a piece to get more advantageous position in the game. And I'm sure a lot of you know that now because either you play chess or you watch The Queen's Gambit, I think, which was on Netflix. I didn't watch it, but my wife did, and we are moving on to Vic Tayback. Okay, now it's 1967. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band has been released. It has nothing to do with Vic Tayback, but still, thought I'd bring it up. Moving on. Oh, but still. I have a funny thing about but still. That's like my least favorite argument when you're arguing with somebody. Like, you'll prove a point that it's right, and they'll be like, well, but still. And they always make me want to smack the shit out of somebody. What do you mean, but still? I just fucking proved a point. I was correct. You can at least acknowledge I'm correct, but don't say but still. That was a weird tangent. That's the alcohol kicking in. Now, for Vic Tayback, though, 1967 is super busy. He's got 8 credits, right? So this guy's rocking and rolling. Some of those credits are cool. 2 episodes of Family Affair. I used to love that show when I was a kid. I used to watch that when it was on reruns. Which, by the way, it's so funny how we have so much more TV in the sense we have so many streaming services and we have so much content. But so many of these shows are dead. Like, when I grew up, I feel like 85% of TV was reruns. The Odd Couple, Cheers, shit, Family Affair, Get Smart, which I'm about to talk about. All those shows, they're all gone. Like, with all these streaming services, you'd think we'd still have, I don't know, maybe they're still there, they're just not in our face, but anyway, I'm just missing all this stuff. But anyway, 67, he's got 8 credits, some are cool, like I said, 2 episodes of Family Affair, 2 episodes of Get Smart, did an episode of Cimarron Strip. That was a Western TV show. And 3 episodes of The Monkees. How about that? The Monkees. Hey, hey, we're the Monkees. People say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down. We're just trying to be friendly. Anyway, and by the way, he did 3 episodes playing 3 different characters. That's how prolific Vic Tayback is. Now, some of the 1967 credits are obscure. He did an episode of Occasional Wife. Right? Occasional Wife. That jumped out at me. I was like, well, I should read about that. So Occasional Wife was a TV show that ran from 66 to 67. It only lasted 30 episodes. Here's the synopsis. A junior executive convinces his female friend to pretend to be his wife so he can move ahead in his company. Not sure how I feel about that. That's a little bit weird. But I will say this, if you think that's should be, you know, that's not appropriate or it's patriarchal or sexist, I will tell you this. I work in my career. I've had the luxury of moving higher up in my career. There's a point where I don't think I would have continued to be promoted if I weren't married. So it is weird. I feel like as a man, companies won't keep pushing up the ladder if you don't have a wife. Anyway, that's a weird tangent. But anyway, this guy sensed it too, so he married the occasional wife. Now, the leads were Michael Callan and Patricia Hardy. Guests included Paul Sand. He was the coach in Teen Wolf. Sally Field guested on this. I'm going to tell you something right now. I know I come off as creepy sometimes. Can't help it. I love beautiful women and I love talented men. I love all this stuff. But I will tell you, there are very few more beautiful women than young Sally Field. Sally Field, when she was young, holy shit, man. She was lights out. I don't know why she didn't have a bigger career. I mean, I get it, Gidget, and she's had a great movie career as an adult, but man, young Sally Field is lights out. Let's go ahead while we're being weird about Occasional Wife. I'll go ahead and read a review. I want to kind of get a user experience and see what they thought of it. This person says, they titled their review, The Best Series of the 66-67 TV Season. Well, all right, I'll have to take their word for it. This was my favorite show when I was in the 6th grade, and I was heartbroken when it was canceled. Michael Callan and Patricia Hardy had terrific chemistry. They would later marry, although not for long. Oh, well, there you go. Glad I learned that. Jack Collins was also perfect as Callan's boss, and the reaction shots of the man in the middle, i.e. the guy who had the apartment in between those of Callan and Hardy, were priceless. Back in the 60s, we accepted absurd premises on TV shows without giving it a second thought. The beauty of Occasional Wife is that the actors performed as if there was nothing at all absurd in their situations. Sure, would love to see it again. Well, this little sixth grader, this is Casey Kasem in sixth grade. This letter is for you. Anyway, this person loved it when they were in sixth grade, so glad they loved it. Another obscure 1967 show that Vic Tayback worked on was The Second Hundred Years, which I never heard of that one either. So The Second Hundred Years lasted 67 to 68, 26 episodes. Here is the synopsis. The misadventures of a man who was revived out of decades of accidental suspended animation and is still physically half the age of his own son and matches the age of his grandson. Huh. I wonder if he had to be like Austin Powers, where he had to be unfrozen and then take a really long pee and then talk really loud and had no inner dialogue. No? Austin Powers? Anyone? Well, anyway, that joke made me laugh. Hope it made you laugh too. Okay, now it's 1968, and this will be as cool a year for Vic Tayback as he's ever going to have, because this is a really cool year for Tayback. Check it out. He kicks the year off with a season 2 episode of Star Trek. Boom. Interesting fact about Star Trek, I never watched it. So I've seen one episode. It was the half black, half white episode where those two aliens were fighting each other. Their faces were half black, half white. The big, you know, I've talked about this on podcasts before. You probably know it, but the big reveal being at the end is, well, his white is on the right and my white's on the left. And of course, there's a big, you know, allegory about how we're all the same and our differences are small. And anyway, and to the rest of the crew, they couldn't even tell those differences. Anywho, Vic's episode aired January 12th, 1968. It was titled A Piece of the Action. The crew of the Enterprise struggles to cope with a planet of imitative people who have modeled their society on 1920s gangsters. That's kind of cool. So then in 68, he does a sex comedy with a what the fuck title. With six, you get egg roll. I'm going to read that again. It's 1968. Vic Tayback does a sex comedy called With Six, You Get Egg Roll. Anyway, I don't know. I can't imagine it's the Asian community would be happy with that. It was Doris Day's last film, oddly enough. Starred Doris Day and Brian Keith, young Barbara Hershey, like 20-year-old Barbara Hershey. She was pretty dreamy at 20, real pretty. George Carlin was in this. Alice Ghostly was in this. Jamie Farr and William Christopher were both in this. Jamie Farr and William Christopher were both in the TV show MASH. Jamie Farr was Klinger, and William Christopher was the priest. I don't remember his name, but the father something. Well, of course, father. But anyway, he was the priest. Now, Vic Tayback also does some classic TV in 68. He does episodes of That Girl and Mission Impossible. But let's talk about the coolest shit he does in 68, right? The Steve McQueen classic Bullet. Wow, Bullet. This was a cool movie. Probably most famous, not for McQueen, but for its real star, the 1968 Ford Mustang GT, man. Great car chase scene. Probably one of the best car chases in movie history. Let me pull this up, man. If you've never seen Bullet, pause the podcast, go watch Bullet, and come back. Here is the synopsis. An all guts, no glory San Francisco cop becomes determined to find the underworld kingpin that killed the witness in his protection. So again, amazing car chase scene, made even cooler by San Francisco, quite frankly. I mean, if you've not ever driven in San Francisco, holy shit. So I've only been to San Francisco once. I spent a weekend there when I was probably 25 years old. This is going back 20 years ago. And I'll never forget, I arrived Friday night, probably like 8 or 9 o'clock. I'd driven 5 or 6 hours to get there. And I'm in the city. I'm heading towards my hotel. And those hills are no joke. I mean, they are steeper than you even think than you see on TV. And I come into a red light, several cars in front of me. And man, while we're sitting at this red light, it turns green. And the car in front of me starts rolling towards me. I guess he had a standard transmission. I almost shit my pants. I learned really quickly in San Francisco, you do not drive real close to people. You don't tailgate people, because this dude started rolling back towards me before he got his car in gear and started driving. I almost fucking, I probably aged like 4 years in that moment. But what a great movie. Check out the cast, man. This is Steve McQueen, Jacqueline Bisset, Robert Vaughn. He's the man from Uncle. He was in this. Robert Duvall was in this. Simon Oakland, Norman Fell. I love Norman Fell. Man, Norman Fell was Mr. Roper on Three's Company. Speaking of Three's Company. It's Tip of 40, man. Tip of 40 for my homie, Suzanne Summers. We lost her earlier this week. Makes me sad. She was super, super hot. So when I was a kid, I came across a box of old Playboys. I was in seventh grade. God, the more I think about it, the creepier I sound on this fucking podcast. But I wish I'd kept these, not for porn reasons, but for nostalgia reasons. But I didn't. I came across an old box of Playboys when I was probably in seventh grade. And looking through them, I came across the famous Suzanne Summers one. I wish I had kept that. It's probably worth a lot of money. But Suzanne Summers was great. She was really funny. She was really beautiful. And she died at 76, I think she was, or 77. And it just still seems too early. But anyway, enough of that. Who else was in this movie? Of course, Vic Tayback. Anyone else I recognize? Nothing's about it. But Bullet is great. So it's got a great poster, too. Bullet is a poster that's... I might want to pick up a copy of that poster and put it in my office. It looks so cool. Funny thing about it, so there's a store where I live here in Tennessee, a men's clothing store. Excuse me. Excuse me there. Men's clothing store, and it's really overpriced. It's like one of those places where it's like $120, $150 jeans. I'm like, jeans for a dude? But the whole theme of the store and all the decor is all Steve McQueen stuff. So I was in there maybe a year or two ago. And roaming around, and I think I was with my wife, and she was doing something there. And the sales girl, I kind of happened to be next to her, and I thought I'd strike up a conversation. I was like, so what's going on with all the McQueen stuff? And she literally looks at me, she's like, what, who, what? I was like, Steve McQueen, you know, the pictures all over the walls here. She had no clue what the fuck I was talking about. The whole fucking store is literally decorated in Steve McQueen stuff. Like, I'm talking like mural size Steve McQueen shit, and she did not know what I was talking about. Anyway. That's that. I first watched Bullet when I was at Second City, going through their conservatory. There's a certain level where you're required to watch lots and lots of different genres of movies, whether it's Kurosawa stuff, Westerns and 60s and 70s movies and all that. That's where I learned I hated Fellini films. It's not for me. But I'll never forget one of those movies I watched was Bullet. That was like my introduction to Steve McQueen. That and Papillon are probably my two introductions to Steve McQueen. And Papillon, spoiler alert, will come up later in this podcast. So let's read a couple of trivias about Bullet. I think it's worth it. I made a note to read them. Let's take a look here. Bear with me. Although Steve McQueen is credited with the driving during the chase sequence, it was actually shared by McQueen and Bud Eakins, one of Hollywood's best stunt drivers. From the interior shots looking forward inside the Mustang, it's easy to see which one is driving. When McQueen is driving, the rearview mirror is down, reflecting his face. When Eakins is driving, it is up, so his face is hidden. And then I made a note to read another one. Check this out. Bill Hickman, the backup hitman and driver of the Charger, was highly experienced in driving stunts and in racing. 13 years before this film, being a good friend of actor and budding race driver James Dean, he was accompanying Dean to a race in Salinas, California, driving Dean's station wagon and car trailer while Dean drove ahead in his Porsche Spyder. Dean died in an accident on the way, and it was Bill Hickman who extricated Dean's body from the wreck. Holy shit, what a weird connection from Bullet to James Dean. And the last ever photo of James Dean is him getting gas on that fateful drive. He stopped somewhere, I think it was like a Sherman Oaks. Oh shit. Anyway, he stopped there to get gas. Later on, that gas station became a flower shop that was featured pretty prominently in 6 Feet Under, in the early seasons of 6 Feet Under. And I, one night with my girlfriend, who's now my wife, we used to live right near there, and we stopped there at night, and I got a picture at the same gas pump at James Dean had been at. So I actually have a photo kind of, you know, imitating the last photo of James Dean. Anyway, crazy stuff, crazy, crazy stuff. We're not done with Bullet yet. Let's read a review on Bullet, because this movie is just too fucking important to go. So, rings with authenticity. This person only gives it a 7 out of 10. Despite having aged somewhat, Bullet remains a tough, gritty, and altogether realistic portrait of police life in late 60s San Francisco. The film is, of course, most renowned for the spectacular, even by today's standards, car chase, in which Steve McQueen famously did his own stunt driving. This person's like, I wonder what the insurance policy was like. Although McQueen didn't really have to stretch beyond his already established screen persona, he is perfect in the role. He is Bullet like Connery is Bond. I love it. He is Bullet. like Connery is Bond. Well said. We are only in 1968. We got to get a move on, or else we're going to spend the next 4 years of my life talking about Vic Tayback. And although I love him, I don't want to die talking about Vic Tayback. So let's do it. So 1969, anyone? 1969 is interesting for Vic Tayback. He has some Fanacek credits. He did episodes of Lancer, and Land of the Giants. Those are both TV shows that Rick Dalton did in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He also did an episode of My World and Welcome to It. And I did a whole interview regarding Bill Windham in an early season of Fanacek, season two, I think. I forget. But William Windham was this, and he went by Bill Windham. He was a star of My World and Welcome to It, won an Emmy for it. It only lasted the one season, but he won an Emmy for it. And Vic Tayback appeared in one of those episodes during that season, so I thought that was pretty cool. Those are some old-school Fanacek credits. Now, he has a credit worth talking about here in 1969. He did an episode of a short-lived show called The Outsider. And, of course, not to be confused with the film The Outsider, but The Outsider TV show lasted 68 to 69, only 26 episodes. David Ross is an orphaned ex-con loner living in a world that loathes and makes a living that he loathes and makes a living as a private investigator in Los Angeles to tackle his financial problems and other people's problems as well. Well, I thought that was interesting. I made it up to read the first trip. Well, first of all, let me show you the cast, actually. Darren McGavin, he came up again. He comes up a lot in the podcast. He's the lead. Let's take a look at that trivia, because I do remember what it was. It was pretty cool trivia. So here you go. So it's basically the synopsis again. This scenario, so the trivia, what I mean is it reads a synopsis. Remember that synopsis. Now, this scenario is strikingly similar to both the 1970s drama comedy series The Rockford Files and the 1957 to 62 Western series Maverick, both starring James Garner, by the way. Rockford Files and Maverick star James Garner. And, all right, so I'm going to start that over again because I'm fucking it up. This scenario is strikingly similar to both the 1970s drama comedy series The Rockford Files and the 1957 to 1962 Western series Maverick. And the protagonists of all three share the same basic heroic archetype. The misunderstanding knight-errant who is wrongly perceived as dishonest. Across the trilogy, the Mavericks, Ross, and Rockford all typically find themselves weighing a financial windfall against a moral dilemma, with their consciousness almost always trumping their wallets. Not surprisingly, all three were created by the same producer, writer Roy Huggins. Here's why I thought that was cool. So Roy Huggins was the producer writer of this, but also did Maverick and Rockford Files, both with James Garner, and they're all similar characters. And I thought that was a neat trivia. Whoever wrote that really kind of tied it all in really well. Whew, we're getting, 42 minutes into this sucker, and now we are in the 70s. I'm going to pause it to go pour another drink. And I am back. Chose not to do an old-fashioned this time. I did a Gold Rush, one of my go-to drinks. It's basically whiskey, simple syrup, with some lemon juice. And there you go. I call mine a Kentucky Gold Rush because I don't use actual whiskey. I use bourbon whiskey rather than, you know, Tennessee whiskey or any other kind of whiskey. So now that you've written that down, we're in the 70s, and this is going to be a defining decade for Vic Tayback, right? And we all kind of know why. So lots of classic TV, lots of not-so-classic TV, some classic movies, some not-so-classic movies. Let's explore, shall we? So 1970 is a weird year. He does Bonanza. I think everyone did Bonanza. I might have been in an episode of Bonanza. I don't even know. But I mean, everyone did that. But then he also does three, like, meh shows. Like, meh. Here Comes the Brides. He did The Silent Force, which is The Silent Force, like an Aaron Spelling fucking wannabe Mission Impossible knockoff kind of show. He also did an episode of The Young Lawyers. But in 1971, shit starts to get real. He kicks it off with an episode of The Mary Tyler Moore Show. Bam! I mean, that's a big deal. He follows this up with the third of three appearances that he would make on, wait for it, Bewitched! As if I haven't had enough of that show lately. So Vic appeared in a season one and a season five episode with Dick York. And then in this year, 1971, he appeared in a season seven episode with Dick Sargent. And if you want to compare Dick York and Dick Sargent or hear me do it, well, hell, listen to my last several episodes. I spent three episodes talking about Dick York and Dick Sargent. Well, to be fair, two episodes talking about Dick York and Dick Sargent and then one Dick Sargent standalone episode. So that's pretty awesome. Now, other shows Vic did in 1971 include Mannix, which again referenced in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and The Courtship of Eddie's Father. I've never actually seen this show, but of course I know it. Now I want you to know it. I referenced it a lot when I was on stage at Second City for some reason. If there was ever a scene where I was supposed to be watching TV or I don't know, I thought it was funny to say, I'm watching The Courtship of Eddie's Father. But ironically, I really don't know much about it except that Bill Bixby is in it. But The Courtship of Eddie's Father ran from 69 to 72, lasted 73 episodes. It plays like or seems like a drama. The synopsis is simple. Widower Tom Corbett raises his young son, Eddie. But it's actually a comedy, which is interesting. So, of course, the leads were Bill Bixby and Brandon Cruz as father and son. Bill Bixby famously became Dr. David Banner on the TV show The Hulk. Some good guest stars in here. Jodie Foster was a guest star. Willie Ames from Eight is Enough and later Charles in Charge. Jerry Stiller and Mira. Ah, Stiller and Mira. Those are both Ben Stiller's parents. Who else was it? Tippi Hedren did this. Any other big names here? I'm sure there are. I don't want to scroll through the whole thing. Sally Struthers did this show. Sammy Davis Jr. did the show. Pat Morita. Wow, a lot of people did this. Suzanne Plachette. I could do this all day. Of course, Vic Tayback. All right, let's move on from that. The show received several Emmy and Golden Globe nominations. Like I said, it was a comedy series, but it doesn't really seem like one. So I want to read a review just to kind of get the tone of the show. Here's a review. This person gives it a 10 out of 10. The most touching bond ever shown on TV is the title of this review. The Courtship of Eddie's Father follows the best friend, father-son relationship of widower magazine manager Tom Corbett and his young son Eddie. Eddie wants a new mother and cleverly schemes to find the ideal person for his father. Episodes center around this theme as Eddie interferes with his father's relationships before evolving into compassionately raising Eddie. The pair are delicately cared for by their wise Japanese housekeeper, Miss Livingston. That's a traditional Japanese name, Livingston. Rounding out the cast is Tom's free-spirited art director, Norman Tinker. And a bunch of other people. The sitcom ran for 3 seasons and so on and so on. So again, I always assumed this was more of a drama. Didn't realize it was a comedy. The final episode, though, of the show was very, very controversial. Basically, the son, Eddie, he angered his dad, and then the dad, Bill Bixby, just, you know, his eyes started glowing. It turned to a rage. He became the Incredible Hulk and beat the shit out of everybody. So made that part up. But that is The Courtship of Eddie's Father. Now, can you guess what else Vic Tayback did in 1971? Can you guess? He did a season 1 episode of Columbo. I've referenced this appearance several times on the podcast because, frankly, it's strange casting. So let me explain. The episode aired November 17th, 1971, and it's titled Suitable for Framing. Let me pull up the synopsis here. A wealthy art collector is murdered, and all signs point to a robbery gone wrong. But the nephew's alibi is a little too convenient, and Columbo pulls a fast one to ferret out the killer. And you know he solved that shit, because that's what Columbo does, y'all. But I love the title, Suitable for Framing. See, get it now? Framing, double entendre, framing for a murder, but you frame art as well. Very clever. Tayback played a hippie beatnik painter, and I just thought it was odd because he's like this big hulking guy. It didn't really seem like a beatnik painter. He's like wearing a tank top, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So I thought it was odd casting, but hey, who am I to judge? I love Vic Tayback and I love Columbo. Made a note to read a specific trivia here. Ross Martin, who plays the killer, was Peter Falk's camp counselor. I thought that was interesting. So there, a little Peter Falk when he's a kid, his camp counselor, is now the killer in an episode. Larry David, incidentally, went to camp with Richard Lewis. They knew each other as kids in camp, did not like each other, and then years later would both be comics in New York, become great friends, and of course Richard Lewis is a series regular on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I've met Richard Lewis twice, once in the 90s in Midtown Manhattan at like 7 in the morning, and once, probably about 10 years ago, in the Nashville airport. And a very, very friendly guy. Okay, Vic Tayback must have had some gambling debt or something he needed to pay off because my man worked a lot in 1972. He had 12 acting credits in 72. He did not stop working. That's like a seriously busy year. So let's break it down. Of those 12, he did some hit TV shows, right? He did Ironside, the FBI, Gunsmoke, the Mod Squad. Of course, the FBI referenced in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He did some forgettable TV shows this year. You know, they can't all be winners. He did Arnie, the Super, the Bold Ones, the New Doctors, and then Owen Marshall, Counselor at Law. He did movies with stupid titles. Death Follows the Psycho. Every Little Crooked Nanny. That was another movie. Did see that little wordplay there? Every Little Crooked Nanny. Not Every Little Nook and Cranny. It's Every Little Crook and Nanny. Ugh. Interesting credits too. Well, that'll have to wait because I'm going to do all my interesting credits at the end of this episode. In 73, Tabak has a banner year. Episodes of The Streets of San Francisco, The Partridge Family, and Emergency. I love Emergency. He does 8 movies this year. I'm going to go out on a limb now and say Vic Tabak is officially in demand. 8 movies in 1 year. Included in these movies are several TV movies. And man, I miss TV movies. I really do. That's a lost art. The you know, made for TV movie, Sunday night movie, movie of the month, movie of the week. I just have fond memories of that stuff, and it's gone now. Let's look at some of these gems that Vic Tabak did this year. He did Honor Thy Father. It's a mafia movie with Joe Bologna. He did Partners in Crime, which is a private detective movie. And then he did The Alpha Caper, and we got to talk about this one. Let me pull up the synopsis. This one's kind of interesting for a myriad of reasons. A parole officer forced into retirement gets together 3 ex-convicts to pull off a $30 million armed car robbery. It's got a killer poster. It's so cool looking. And the one on IMDb is Italian, so it's really kind of wild. Oh man, great poster. And a killer cast. Check out the cast of this movie. The lead is Henry Fonda. It also features Leonard Nimoy, Jimmy Mack, James McKeachin. We've talked about him a lot on the podcast. Larry Hagman from My Dream of Jeannie and Dallas, of course. Vic Tabak. Anyone else? Nope, that's about it. What a great cast. Now, the next TV movie Vic Tabak does this year is The Blue Knight. It's a cop movie with William Holden and Lee Remick. And that's a wrap on his TV movies. But 73 also gave us several theatrical release films. First up, a movie we have to discuss, Emperor of the North. I'm the King of the North. Not to be confused with that. Emperor, that was a Game of Thrones reference for all of you who don't watch Game of Thrones. Okay, Emperor of the North. Here, check out this synopsis. In 1933, during the Depression, Shaq, the brutal conductor of the number 19 train, has a personal vendetta against the best train-hopping hobo tramp in the Northwest. A number one. All right, I don't know what the hell that's all about, but check out this cast. Lee Marvin, Ernest Borgnine. Now, those two were in The Dirty Dozen together. That's going to come up in a second. So Lee Marvin, Ernest Borgnine, Keith Carradine, Simon Oakland. Who else is in this? I got to scroll. That alone is pretty fucking great. Sid Haig is in this. Sid Haig, great character actor, typically in horror films. Now, you know, I referenced Dirty Dozen. Well, this movie was directed by Robert Aldrich, the director of The Dirty Dozen. So I guess that makes sense. It was based on a short story by Jack London. I loved Jack London when I was a kid. He wrote, of course, The Call of the Wild, White Fang, that sort of thing. So Emperor of the North. Now, I made a note to read the second trivia for this movie. Bear with me. Ba-da-da-da-ba-da-da. The film was made and originally released as Emperor of the North Pole. After initial screenings, 20th Century Fox executives feared that the audiences might think the title indicated a Christmas movie, you think? Or an Arctic exploration story, and so shortened the title to Emperor of the North. A change that made little sense in terms of audience expectations, and none at all in light of the fact that Emperor of the North Pole is a hobo term used extensively throughout the film. So this film is about hobos. I just recently rewatched Mad Men, all 7 seasons. God, I forgot how much I love that show. What a great, fucking great show that is. But hobo lifestyle and hobo code is pretty prevalent in that series as well. I didn't realize how much hobo culture there was back in the day and how they had this code and how they traveled the railways. I don't know. Interesting thing. It warranted a whole movie here. So, or a book really by Jack London. So that is Emperor of the North. Then Tabak does another mafia movie. He does The Dawn is Dead. And then he does a movie called Maxi with Talia Shire. It looks stupid, but the poster is worth discussing. So you have a chance, pull up Maxi from 1973. The poster is basically kind of creepy looking, but it's him, like, looks just like Mel Sharples from Alice, which he hasn't done yet. He's wearing that same hat rolled up the same way. I'm wondering if this poster of this it's like the cover of the VHS box. I'm wondering if this came out way later after Vic Tabak found success as Alice or in Alice, because it's basically Mel Sharples. So they were trying to probably, take advantage of that, ride those coattails. There's more. There's one more 1973 movie that I need to discuss because it is really, really huge. Papillon. So Vic Tabak now does another Steve McQueen movie. I believe this is his third one, and it's Papillon. This movie is amazing. What an incredible movie Papillon is. 1973. I'll read the synopsis. A French convict in the 1930s befriends a fellow criminal as the two of them begin serving their sentence in the South American penal colony on Devil's Island, which inspires the man to plot his escape. Of course, famously starring Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman. Hoffman steals it. I mean, Dustin Hoffman's amazing in this. Who else is in this as you scroll through? Bill Mumy is in this. Bill Mumy from The Twilight Zone. He played the little kid. I just watched one with him. My wife and I did with our older daughter where Bill Mumy was a famous kid actor from Lost in Space. He did several Twilight Zones. The famous one is the one where everyone's scared of him. He's got powers to control everything. Like, that's good that you did that. That's good. He's like runs the whole town. And then that story was featured in Twilight Zone, the movie. Another famous Bill Mumy one is the one that my wife and I just watched the other night, which is a little boy who's really close to his grandmother. She dies and he can communicate with her through a toy phone, which is weird, but then like she's lonely and she wants him to kill himself so she can join him. So pretty fucking creepy episode. But anyway, he's in this movie. That was a weird tangent. Twilight Zone. What a great movie. Written by, of course, Dalton Trumbo. Actually, there's several writers on this, including William Goldman and Dalton Trumbo, both really famous screenwriters. It was remade, probably 5-6 years ago. I don't know. With Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy. Didn't really do anything, the remake. But it's a funny story about that I think I've told on the podcast before. A guy I used to work with went and saw it. And he came back, it's like Monday morning, we're talking. I was like, what did you do this weekend? He's like, I went to the movies. I saw Papillon. I'm like, you mean Papillon? He's like, oh, I guess. I'm like, the name is referenced a lot in the movie. How'd you not catch that as Papillon or not Papillon? But anyway, that's that. I made a note here to read some trivia like I like to do. So let's read a specific trivia from Papillon. Let me pull up the trivia here. I made a note to read a specific one. 1, 2, 3, the fourth one. Okay. Whilst shooting in Jamaica, Dustin Hoffman met Sir Paul McCartney, who was vacationing in Montego Bay. One evening, Hoffman invited McCartney to dinner and challenged him to write a song about anything. Since painter Pablo Picasso had just died, Hoffman requested that McCartney compose a song around Picasso's dying words, which were, "Drink to me, drink to my health, you know I can't drink anymore." McCartney created a demo on the spot, and the song Picasso's Last Words, Drink to Me, appeared on Wings' 1973 album, Band on the Run. So I thought that was pretty wild. Love it. And that's going to be a wrap on Vic Tabak, folks. That concludes part one. Only Fanichek, only me, only I can do an episode on the career of Vic Tabak and not even get to Alice yet. Talk about getting in the fucking weeds. That's like the main thing the guy's famous for. But wait. I have, as a gift to you, a bonus for you for listening, 5 interesting credits that I want to discuss. So let's discuss 5, credits that I found that I thought were worth noting. Let's go. The first WTF credit is 1962's Surfside 77. Now, how dumb does this synopsis sound? Private Eye Bernard Bing Bang is hired by his old lady, Agatha Bungworthy, to find her runaway niece, Cynthia, heir to the family fortune. I don't know. It just sounded stupid. It's got a stupid poster, too. It's just the bare facts, ma'am. I'm reading from the poster. The wackiest private eye in history, eyeing dozens of the loveliest suspects ever. And then it's like kind of naked women whose breasts are covered up. The naughtiest, nudist lineup of suspects that Hollywood has ever seen. Wow, so I guess there's a lot of nudity in this? I don't know. It looks fucking stupid. No, something Bing Bang and Bung worthy. Okay, that's the first one. Second one. Second interesting WTF credit. 1967 TV show Captain Nice. Now, this was really odd. I had never heard of this. This is really worth taking a look at. First, I'm going to read the synopsis. So this TV show, hold on. How long did it last? Captain Nice ran for just 1 year, 67. Only lasted 15 episodes. Here's the synopsis. Carter Nash was a chemist in a police department who discovered a liquid that could turn him into Captain Nice, an odd sort of superhero, very shy and dominated by his mother. Captain Nice flew, he feared heights, in his tattered leotards, fighting bad guys because his mother told him to do so. That's a real TV show. Now, what's really interesting is the lead, Captain Nice, is William Daniels. He's famous. I mean, he's done a lot. He was the voice of Kit for our generation. I didn't watch the show, but he was probably most famous as Mr. Feeny in Boy Meets World, Girl Meets World, all that shit. Alice Ghostly was also in the show. Anyone famous make any appearances? Bob Newhart appeared. Victor French appeared. Simon Oakland appeared. Anyone else? But what a Joe Campanella. Oh, I love that guy. Vic Tayback. Of course, Vic Tayback. But what a fucking odd show. So he was dominated by his mom and making him a nice guy. And it's Mr. Feeny. I don't know. 15 episodes, probably 14 episodes, too many. The third WTF credit, the 1969 TV show, The Good Guys. It ran 68 to 70. It lasted 42 episodes. It's got kind of a kind of synopsis. Let me find it here. I can't find it. Give me 1 second. Sometimes IMDb gets pretty weird on you. All right, The Good Guys. Here is the synopsis. Bert Grammas and Rufus Butterworth were childhood chums who decided to pool their savings and purchase a diner, which they called Bert's Place. Originally, bachelor Rufus worked as a cab driver, while Bert and his wife Claudia operated the diner, but Rufus eventually quit his cabbie gig. Yay for him. Hal, Andy, and Big Tom were some of their regular customers. I don't know. Just seems stupid to me. But the cast. The cast is worth looking at, right? Bob Denver. He was Gilligan. Herb Edelman. He was Stans Bornak. Joyce Van Patten. Jack Perkins. Alan Hale Jr., also from Gilligan's Island. Jim Backus, also from Gilligan's Island. Joe Besser. Joe Besser was one of, like, many Curly Joes. So the Three Stooges was Larry Moe and Curly. Curly retired, so then it was Larry Moe and Shemp. Then they had Joe Derita at one point, Joe Besser at one point. I'm not sure in what order, but Joe Besser was one of the Three Stooges. George Firth did this show. Michael Lerner did this show. Michael Lerner being the guy that I used to come to my video store, and I worked at a video store in the Bronx as a kid. William Daniels did this show. Mr. fucking Feeny, he's back. All right. Oh, my gosh. Now, I made a note to read several of the trivias here. They are kind of WTF trivias. Let me pull up the trivia on this show, The Good Guys. Okay. At the end of the first season, the ratings were low. Yeah, no shit, because the fucking premise is boring. CBS decided to cast Bob Denver's co-star from Gilligan's Island, Alan Hale Jr., to improve the ratings. It didn't work, and the show was canceled after the second season. Well, there you go. Here's another trivia. In one of the episodes, which included all three alumni of Gilligan's Island, which is Bob Denver, Alan Hale Jr., and Jim Backus, there was an inside joke where Backus' character asked the other two, "Hey, haven't I seen you two before on an island somewhere?" All right, WTF, y'all. The fourth WTF, the 1971 film Blood and Lace. Not sure why I labeled this one WTF. I guess I'll find out when I look at it. First, we shall read the trivia. After her prostitute mother is murdered, a teenage girl is sent to a remote orphanage run by a mysterious woman and her handyman, both whom she comes to suspect are hiding dark secrets. I love how it's a handyman, Schneider. It's run by a mysterious woman and Schneider. That would be great if it were. But here's something I thought was interesting. So the lead in the movie is Gloria Graham. She died in 1981. She's been dead a long time, but her face was killing me. I was like, who is she? As a youngster, she was Violet in It's a Wonderful Life, the really hot blonde that, you know, Jimmy Stewart, you know, would kind of flirt with, and he kind of always had one eye on her, and then he ultimately helped her as an adult. We don't know what he did to help her, but a lot of people suspect that maybe she got pregnant and he gave her money to get her out of town or whatever it was. But yeah, Gloria Graham is the lead. And that's a really cool poster of this movie, like a real kind of old school, you know, horror kind of poster. Shock after shock after shock as desire drives bargain with death. Anyway, I don't know. I thought that was kind of neat. And finally, my fifth and final of this episode, what the fuck credit, 1972 TV series Longstreet. This one made me laugh. I think I've actually read about this on the podcast before, but I don't know. I'm starting to tell the same stories over and over again. But check out this. So this was a TV show. Ran from 71 to 72. Lasted 24 episodes. Here's the simple synopsis. The cases of a blind insurance investigator. I just love that. I can imagine, like, I like playing with the idea of that and that idea in the boardroom. All right, I've got an idea for a show. It's about an insurance investigator. Insurance investigator, you say, huh? No, it needs a little pizzazz. It needs a little oomph. All right, how about he's a deaf insurance investigator? No. I need a little more pizzazz. How about a blind insurance investigator? Now you got me something. Get your agent on the phone. I'm committing to 24 episodes. I love the cases of a blind insurance investigator. What the fuck was going on? So, surprisingly lasted 24 episodes. But the cast is interesting. So, you know, people I never heard of, James Franciscus, I think I've heard of him though, Marlon Mason came up in an earlier thing. I should have read it out loud. I didn't. Bruce Lee appeared in this though. I thought that was interesting. Bruce Lee, Ed Lauder, famous character actor. He's come up on the podcast before. Anyone else? Louis Gossett Jr., Victor French. We mentioned him earlier. How about that? I think that's about it for that. And that is Long Street. Those are my five interesting what the fuck credits for Vic Tayback. And that is going to be a wrap on Vic Tayback part one. I will be back soon with Vic Tayback part two. And I promise we're going to talk about Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. And of course, its TV show version, Alice. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you like the show, rate it and review it. That always helps me. Hit me up at fanacheckpodcast@gmail.com. I can send you some free stickers if you'd like. You can also hit me up on Facebook. I am Real Fanacheck. I'm on the Twitterverse at Fanacheck Podcast. And what I really need you to do, you know what it is. I don't know why you always keep me or you make me ask all the time, but I just need you to stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacheck.